So we come again to the feast day of St. Francis of Assisi, one of my favorite days of the year, not just because it is so fun to have our animals with us in church, but because of the figure of St. Francis himself, who was, I'm sure I've said this before, but he was very important to me in my college years and was really influential even in the decision to become a priest. In sort of the same way that I've been talking about Nelson Mandela, whose face I saw and asked myself, what allowed him to survive 27 years in prison and emerge a whole human being with his face still radiant and kind? And I said of Nelson Mandela, I want that. Well, many, many years ago, I said the same thing about St. Francis. Reading the transparently legendary stories of his life, the little flowers of St. Francis, or the Fioretti. And what shone through those stories was a kind of love and a kind of freedom that said, ah, I want that. And so here we are, and we're celebrating the life of Francis, who is a figure that is very easy, I think, to sentimentalize. And I would prefer that we not sentimentalize Francis, because what we know him for primarily is his love of creation, his preaching to the birds, his taming of the fierce wolf of Gubbio. He had this relation to creation that was joyful and profound, and it touched everyone who was in his presence. But the secret of Francis is more difficult than that. It's more challenging. And to understand that, you've got to understand a little bit about the life of Francis, which is late 1100s to the early 1200s was his lifespan. He didn't live very long, only about 45, 46 years. And he was part of an emerging merchant class that gave at least a few great prosperity. His father was a wealthy cloth merchant that traveled and brought cloth back to Assisi, and Francis was living a very happy life as kind of the playboy son of a wealthy merchant. You know, good friends, romance, and parties, but also war in a kind of limited 12th century way, like Livingston going to war with Emigrant. Skirmished, and Francis was captured. Something began working in him. And of course, those transformations of our hearts and souls are always pretty mysterious. I mean, I don't think even we can really say the things that changed us and said, oh, well, after that. Something started working on Francis. And what I think it really was is something that I think all of us have glimpsed. But we usually, and I speak for myself, of course, we usually only glimpse it and then forget it. And what Francis, I believe, glimpsed is what we talk about regularly, which is this human life is, at its core, irreducibly a spiritual mystery. That we are living forms on a little planet, but beyond that, we don't really know what we're doing here. And certainly, I mean, it was mysterious in the 12th century. Believe me, you know, when we now know that light has been traveling across the universe for 10 billion years to reach us, and that we live in a universe that is both that vast and so microscopically minute, that I think it is probably true that at the subatomic level, the particles that make up my body are sort of flickering in and out of existence. We live in a very strange, mysterious world. And most of the time, we're thinking about something else. Most of the time, we're thinking about something else. Something else that is more important than beholding the wonder of this creation and beholding what William Temple called a sacramental universe, that everything that exists shines with the radiance of the one who creates it, if you have the eyes to see it. Francis opened himself to that sacramental universe, and how he crossed the line, I don't know. But for Francis, he got called into a life that held him more or less constantly in that place of wonder that the rest of us only glimpse and forget. He was called into that place of wonder, and being called there was not easy, either for him or for his parents, because one of the crucial things that he came to understand, and it's, again, something I've been talking about, it is when Jesus tells us that we have to give up all our possessions to be his follower, he's not saying to possess things is wrong. He's saying to possess things is impossible. You cannot possess things. And if you think you are an owner of things, you are living in a kind of an illusion. We are stewards. We are caretakers. We have things that are entrusted to us that we are supposed to take care of. Broadly, all of creation. Narrowly, the animals we bring. We are caretakers. We don't own anything. And so Francis gave away everything. He gave away his father's cloth, and his father got angry with him. And then he took off his clothes and just kind of walked naked out into the streets of Assisi. And you have to say, poor Mr. and Mrs. Bernardone, you know, who had such a promising young son, Francis. And isn't it too bad that he went insane and is now walking about in a ragged tunic, barefoot, building a church stone by stone in the rain by himself and living on what he can beg. That was what Francis, he said, I don't want anything to get in the way of my sense of being a creature of God's, alive within a spiritual mystery that is infinitely beyond my understanding. There is nothing whatsoever that can be grander or more magnificent or more wonderful than simply being alive. Simply being alive was the great, great gift for Francis. And he knew that we get preoccupied with so many things and put our energy towards so many things that are not nearly as important. What could be more important than beholding the wonder of God's creation? Now, for Francis, it meant you can't own anything. You have to hold to that radical discipline of non-ownership. And so his embrace was Lady Poverty. And, you know, I don't know what would happen if we all decided to do that. I know it's not very likely. And even the men and women that gathered around Francis, they couldn't hold to it. They had to figure out some way of, you know, like making provision for the morrow. And so even the Franciscan order itself could not hold to how radical a vision Francis really had. Because he did. He wandered, impoverished, barely clothed, owning nothing, so as to retain his freedom to behold creation. The gospel today speaks of our belonging to God's creation. And I realized this week, I mean, sort of as I come back from Big Timber, I've been driving convict grade road very slowly. Wonderful, that desolate beauty of that kind of high range country, and seeing antelope, wildlife, and it's magic. And I was thinking of this Sunday, and I heard the words of Jesus, consider the lilies of the field. And I realized, well, most of the time I just hear Jesus saying that, and I don't do what he says. I don't go out and actually consider the lilies of the field. So I'm saying, go out and consider. And it doesn't have to be lilies. You can consider a maple in its flaming leaves, or the river, or an elk, or an antelope. Consider the world around you. And what Jesus is talking about is a couple of things. Both, the things that exist are magnificent and beautiful beyond human fabrication. Even Solomon in all his glory was not clothed like one of these. And it doesn't last very long. It doesn't last very long. Grass in the fields, flower, blooms, gone. Are we not watching it as we speak? It doesn't last very long. And that's what Francis opened his heart to. This little life that we share with all of God's creation, it is beautiful and it fills us with this wild longing that we want to live. And we want the beauty that is this mysterious creation, and that we can't hold on to anything. Everything rises and fades. And can you see the beauty of God's creation? Even though you fail to understand the most vexing mystery of mortality, things do not last. Can you say with Francis, yes, 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 to the bottom of my heart and every day and in every moment and every instant of time, I say yes to being here. And I entrust myself to the God who did not create long ago, but creates in this very instant, living, dynamic energy, creating, and that it comes into being and then it passes away. I hope that someday I understand that. But for now, comprehension is not the issue. The issue is trust. And when Jesus says, make for yourselves an unfailing treasure in heaven, it's not reward that is accruing that you're going to get after you die. The treasure in heaven is meant to be experienced here. It's a way of looking at things. It's a way of seeing things and saying yes to the passing play, the things that rise and die. Say yes to that. Say yes to it without needing to possess it. Say yes to it with your heart full of gratitude. And you will be very close to that place where nobody can take it away from you. The treasure in heaven is the thing that cannot be taken away. The love that fills your heart, the gratitude, the sense of blessing, the sense of trust. Francis, thank you for inviting us to consider such things and to have our attention turned, however briefly, to the beauty and mystery that is all around.